I'm psychologist Dr. Michael Broder. Wouldn't it be nice if those wonderful and effortless feelings of passion that we experience at the beginning of a new love relationship remain with us indefinitely? In this program, we're going to talk about the nature of passion and how both you and your partner can use proven techniques to enhance it at any stage of your relationship. In addition, we'll work on the attitudes which go along with passion and satisfaction and learn how both of you can adopt the ones that will make your relationship more fulfilling than you might ever have thought was possible. Throughout the program, I'll describe numerous exercises you can do. Also, I'll give you opportunities to look at the material presented in order to see how it specifically applies to you and your relationship. It's important that you listen to the entire program, either as a couple or individually. Stop the tape whenever you'd like to take the opportunity to reflect or to discuss what's being said and how it pertains to your relationship. I also suggest that you keep a pen and paper handy so that you can do the exercises and take special note of what you recognize as key items. It's best for you to do the exercises at a time when you can put all of your other concerns aside in order to concentrate on this most important aspect of your life. Some people prefer to listen to the entire program before beginning the exercises, while others find it more helpful to begin doing them the first time they listen. Most of what you'll hear will hit home and perhaps describe your situation to a T, while it's possible that some things may not apply or appeal to you at all. And parts of this program you'll want to listen to over and over again. Many couples find this program to be a constant source of support that's always there for them anytime they need it. With practice, the material and attitudes presented will become second nature. And if you allow them to, they will bring the two of you closer together in a way that you may never before have thought was possible. Let's begin by defining passion. Passion is desire, and it's desire that's also laced with emotion. Passion can be extremely intense, or it can be mild. It can also be positive, or it can be negative. In relationships, positive passion is grounded in the attraction you feel for each other, those romantic feelings of love, desire, and wanting to be together, along with your sexual energy and all that great stuff that the deepest and strongest relationships are made of. The beginning of a relationship can feel exhilarating. Initial passion is something we love to read about in novels and see in movies. Passion is usually the driving force which brings us together, the connection we call chemistry that's so unmistakable and feels so good. Whatever that chemical is that produces the initial passion, attraction, and infatuation, it could perhaps be the most addictive chemical there is. After all, what on earth could possibly be better than those constant feelings of pleasure and well-being that you have when you're infatuated or first in love? So think of your initial passion as the spark that kindles the relationship and that will keep things going, but only for a certain period of time. As your relationship moves past the initial phase, reality sets in and then takes the place of what could have felt like the fantasy of living out of a romance novel. As your partner gradually becomes a real person to you, your relationship, if it is to survive, needs to become integrated into both of your lives. During this evolutionary period, you begin to develop feelings for your partner that expand beyond the fulfillment of your sexual and romantic desires. As you get to know your partner as a person, as well as a love object, you're likely to see that both of you have a wide range of needs to fulfill. This slow and gradual process is how you begin to become more comfortable with each other and how familiarity is developed. And that comfort, incidentally, is the ingredient that is really responsible for keeping relationships together long term. People who seem to be in one short-term relationship after another are usually bonded by this initial passion. But then when the initial passion begins to decrease, it's sometimes easiest to assume that the relationship itself has fizzled out. This process, the decrease in the driving passion that first brought them together, is something that practically every couple experiences to some degree at one point or another. Sometimes this occurs after only a few months, or possibly after you've decided to move in together or marry. At that time, it's not uncommon for panic to set in. But this is little more than an extremely, almost universally common sign that the process now needs to change and that it's time to focus some constant attention on the part of your relationship that was once so automatic. In over 20 years of working with couples, I've noticed so often the main problem is acknowledging that passion and the related sexual, romantic, and playful aspects of their relationship may now need some work or conscious effort. This is not a sign that the spontaneously passionate feelings you experienced at the beginning were a fluke. So let's dispel our first myth, that a good relationship never requires work in this area. Nothing can be further from the truth. There's also such a thing as negative passion, and that's usually expressed through anger. In fact, some of the stormiest relationships around are between couples who report having the best sex. Sometimes the most passionate sex even occurs after the meanest arguments. So in a sense, fighting takes on the form of foreplay. Ironically, these couples are usually consulting me to determine why they fight so often and don't see the connection. The point is that having little or nothing but passion in your relationship isn't the answer either. Because as you can see, relationships like this are often brain dead while remaining heart alive. But working to increase passion is generally necessary in order to prevent a relationship from becoming heart dead, even though it may still be very comfortable and very much brain alive. So remember, a problem most couples have in working toward increasing their passion for each other is the very issue of acknowledging that this side of their relationship needs attention. In my experience, many couples have no problem admitting that they can use help with financial, in-law, or child-rearing problems, but at the same time find the idea of working at staying lovers to be totally out of the question. When talking about initial passion and chemistry, there is some truth to the adage, either it's there or it isn't there. But this is simply not the case when it comes to established relationships. So clearly, when the task at hand involves increasing passion, the symptoms that you and your partner need to recognize include the following. You've passed the initial stage of your relationship, and passion does not come about as automatically as it did in the beginning, yet there's desire, or at least the intellectual commitment, to stay together and to work toward long-term involvement. When you feel noticeably less excited by your partner at any stage of your relationship, and this becomes a source of concern for either of you, or when your partner feels less excited by you. When some life change, such as the birth of a child, a change in career, job, or financial status, or a crisis in any part of your life is followed by or coincides with a decrease in either your sexual appetite or your ability to have fun together in other ways that you once shared. When an ongoing issue, such as a disagreement you can't seem to get resolved, produces chronic anger or unhappiness for either of you, particularly if one of you feels like a loser in the situation and this is acted out in the bedroom. If either one of you is experiencing a sexual dysfunction, such as inhibited or total loss of desire, premature or retarded ejaculation, erectile dysfunction, impotence, anorgasmia, or vaginismus, which we'll discuss a bit later in the program. If your sexual feelings, fantasies, or energies are directed outside of the relationship, and this is not your choice, or if you're considering having an affair, and this is not consistent with your values. Where either you or your partner is feeling turned off by what you perceive as your partner's insensitivity toward your needs, or vice versa. If you're avoiding being alone together, or you're picking petty fights with each other when you are alone and don't really know why. If there's a troubling difference in the amount of affection or sexual activity that one of you desires. if you have sexual feelings when you're away from your partner, which you lose once you're together, or finally, if there aren't any problems now, but you just sense or know your passionate and sexual feelings toward each other could be even more fulfilling for one or both of you. Take a few moments to reflect on the issues that you recognize in your relationship with respect to sex and your passionate involvement toward each other. Think about where this aspect of your lives is versus where you would like it to be, and ask yourself these questions. Are you satisfied with the amount of affection you're getting and giving? With the frequency and quantity of sex? Any other sexual problems? If you and your partner are listening to this program together, you may want to turn off the tape and talk about these things for a while. If you're listening alone, take some time to reflect on this question. Either way, take some notes which you can come back to as we move through the program. And don't let yourself be put off by the idea of thinking in terms of a goal for your passionate or sexual involvement. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. No matter what you put first, there are really only two reasons why we make love or have sex: as a vehicle for pleasure and to procreate. Yet sadly, sex can, for so many, become a form of control, manipulation, pain, humiliation, or contest. It can also greatly affect self-esteem or the lack thereof. In addition, sex has been known to trigger just about every emotion, positive or negative, known to mankind. We've created so many myths about sex, and even used sexuality to define our entire self-image, not to mention the value of our entire relationship, whether in a positive or negative way. Human sexuality is now one of the most studied aspects of human behavior, and while we don't know all the answers, there are a few things we do know. So before going any further, see if you can apply some of these well-accepted facts intended to demystify sex to your situation. It's very rare, perhaps even impossible, to find two people for whom sex means exactly the same thing or who experience it in exactly the same way. For example, once the dust settles and that initial passion fades, it's a rare couple who desires the same amount of sex. This doesn't mean that the one who wants it more is more in love, nor does it mean that the one who wants it less is more distant, less intimate, or less committed to the relationship. If there's a real difference in the frequency of sex that each of you desires, this needs to be talked about without judgment. People who desire sex as often as every day, or as less frequently as every 2 weeks, are still within normal range. What one finds to be pleasurable or distasteful is a highly individual matter as well. So the first step is to accept within yourself your own desires and preferences. The next step is to communicate them to your partner. And it goes without saying that once your desires are communicated, acknowledging your partner's desires is essential. And when acknowledging your partner's desires, imagination and a willingness to listen to your partner are both important ingredients. For example, you might suggest to your partner, "Let's go to a motel this Saturday night so that we can get away from the kids." But your partner might only feel comfortable going out to dinner and coming home after the kids are sleeping and sending the babysitter home and then having some intimate time together. The trick is to negotiate. Remember, as soon as a simple exchange like this escalates into an argument, you've defeated your purpose. And more likely, it will have the effect of discouraging spontaneous requests like this in the future. Now be aware that your partner's tastes may change too, so ask for what you want. And don't be surprised if your needs are quite different. When both of you are aware of what feels good to your partner, you can then derive a great deal of enjoyment, satisfaction, and intimacy from the pleasure you give to each other. Don't expect sex necessarily to be spontaneous. While sexual spontaneity is likely to occur much more frequently at the beginning, life often gets too complex later on to rely on spontaneity. With the normal fatigue and humdrum demands of busy lives, many couples actually need to make definite plans and set aside time to be together sexually. This is particularly true when you have children and complicated work schedules. Take it for granted that sex will require more planning than it did during that wonderful period of courtship when all you had to do when you were together was to attend to your own and to each other's needs. Make sure that your expectations are realistic. For example, it's actually normal to be a little less attracted to your partner as the inevitable familiarity increases. Also, be aware that physiological changes over time affect both men and women sexually. So don't misinterpret those changes as signs that your relationship is in the process of dying. It's way more important and effective for you to adjust your expectations. And don't compare your desires or your partner's preferences with the norms of sexual behavior that show up on television or in the movies. There are things we know to be true. For example, practically everyone has sexual fantasies, sexual anxieties, sexual preferences, and different ideas about how important sex is. Other than that, information that's valid will generally take your individual differences into consideration. With the exception of a small fringe of couples who engage in the types of sexual practices that can result in injury or death, nothing between consenting adults is wrong or problematic unless either partner says it is. Some couples enjoy being creative sexually, while others are perfectly happy being more conventional. I've met many who thought they were sexually inept as a result of their experience in one relationship, only to find a comfortable and exciting situation in another. Keeping these things in mind, you can see how most sexual problems begin and then are ultimately resolved. As one couple once said in my office at the conclusion of their treatment, things started getting better for us sexually when we really started practicing oral sex. That is, we began talking about it as well as doing it. Once again, take a few minutes to further refine your understanding of the situation with respect to sex and passion that exists in your relationship as it is right now. And if you're listening with your partner, take some time to talk and take some notes about some of the things which have just hit home for you. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Just a reminder, please remember to feel free to stop the tape at any time something occurs to you that makes either the issues you're experiencing or where you want to go with them clearer. A sexual problem that affects one partner is a sexual problem that affects both of you. So keep this in mind as you consider some of these approaches to your sexual climate. If you and your partner differ in the amount of sex that either of you desires, work out a compromise that at times lets the person who wants sex less frequently be more passively involved without feeling pressured to have intercourse. For example, you can provide your partner with manual stimulation, have oral sex, or watch your partner masturbate. By the same token, the one who desires more sex needs to back off at times without misinterpreting their partner's lack of desire or different mood as a personal rejection. Birth control methods are the responsibility of both partners. There is no universal pat solution here, but couples who don't want to conceive can usually find ways to preserve pleasure for both partners. Just be sure to talk about it, so you know what you and your partner do find pleasurable, and so you can not only work around the limitations of whatever contraceptive method you use, but make activities such as putting on condoms, for example, a part of your sexual play. In communicating sexual desires or sexual concerns, whether about intercourse, birth control, masturbation, or anything else, each partner needs to make a commitment to the other to be honest. This is the type of honesty that can be most helpful to you in building intimacy. If it can be achieved at this level, that intimacy will spill over to practically all other areas of your relationship as well. Try to share more and more things about yourselves and your desires. Take the opportunity to reveal your sexual fantasies as well. Remember, no one was ever hurt by a sexual fantasy that was merely kept at the level of fantasy or imagination, no matter how unrealistic or bizarre the fantasy might seem. In other words, give yourself permission to explore your and your partner's fantasy life without judging each other or feeling threatened. At the level of imagination, you can explore whatever is enjoyable to both of you. And incidentally, real intimacy here happens when you can share your innermost self with your partner. To the extent that you can't share yourself as much with your partner as you'd like, then one way to instantly increase intimacy is to start talking to your partner about your fear of being more open. When you can begin to communicate on this level, chances are you'll quickly see that you can feel much closer to each other almost instantly. Leave anger out of the bedroom. If something's bothering you so much that it gets in the way of your sex life, deal with whatever that issue is first, or at least let go of it for now. By letting unresolved and often unrelated issues poison your sex life, it'll be only a matter of time before your relationship hits a real and possibly irreparable crisis. If I would have to point to the most common obstacle to passion and good sex, in a word, it would be anger. After all, it's rare that you can feel angry and lovingly sexual toward the same person at the same time. I certainly couldn't. If you feel angry at your partner a great deal of the time, take a look at the demands you could be putting on your partner and the relationship in general. For example, if you tell yourself, "My relationship must give me all the fulfillment I desire and must not deprive me of anything I really want," it could be that that belief of yours itself is what ignites your anger. Ask yourself, is this possible? Do I know of any actual relationship that does or could meet this standard? Could our climate be improved greatly if only I made the expectations I put on my partner and our relationship more realistic? Some of our other programs, which I'll mention later, address the anger issue more comprehensively. Part of communicating your sexual desires is not only to tell, but to show your partner what it is that you prefer. I call this teaching your partner visceral empathy. As individuals, each of us differs in the amount of touch we like and how we like to be touched. For example, some of us like more pressure, others like less. We also differ in where we like to be touched. On some parts of our body, we find touch to be very pleasurable, too sensitive, or even downright painful. And it's important to know at what different points in our lovemaking we like certain things to be done. Some people like or love oral sex. Others hate it. Some people like to talk during sex. Others find talking to be a complete turnoff. Some people like to remain physically close for a while after sex, while others prefer to be left alone. No one can possibly be expected to know these things about you without your help. If your partner isn't satisfying you, don't make matters worse by casting blame. Instead, assume that by teaching your partner how to satisfy you, and by you reciprocating, you'll get to know each other and grow together in this area. Think of your lovemaking as a type of deal. You please me, that is, give me a certain degree of fulfillment, and in exchange, I'll do the same for you. If you stop and think about it, this kind of bargaining, whether consciously done or otherwise, is really the basis for all relationships. So never think of yourself as a martyr or as someone who only gives altruistically without expecting anything in return. If you do begin to feel this way, it's probably a good indication that you need to say, "I'm not getting what I need. Can we talk about it?" And this would be a perfect opportunity for you to bring each other up to date on what your current needs may be. There's no lack of information on lovemaking techniques, and we'll talk about a lot of them later on in this program. In addition, you can buy many fine self-help books and tapes on the subject. They will give you numerous ideas about sexual exploration, which you can try together. If you seek out such information with an eagerness to experiment, you'll discover many wonderful experiences with your partner. Variations of foreplay and sex are infinite, and you and your partner owe it to yourselves to learn them. Sexual and sensual play does not necessarily mean intercourse. It refers to any type of physical intimacy which you and your partner share. For some partners, watching a sexy or romantic movie may be a pleasurable way to establish this mood. For others, a quiet conversation about the day's events or the recollection of a moment you once shared might bring you closer. Taking a bath together, massaging, kissing, and touching can all become part of a pleasurable sexual experience. Variety for many couples is the key. And keep in mind that even though a pleasurable sexual encounter can certainly include orgasm for either or both partners, it does not necessarily have to. It's always sad when one or both members of a couple tell me that one of them merely not having an orgasm ruined for them a potentially pleasurable evening or experience they had together. When communicating your sexual needs, if you still find yourself holding back, try to understand what your issues and fears are. Are you telling yourself that your partner should know what to do for you even though this hasn't been discussed? That would be mental telepathy. Do you fear embarrassment? Do you fear being judged negatively for talking about fantasies that may be a little different than desires that you label as normal? Please keep in mind that you and only you are the sole authority on your sexual and sensual needs, just as your partner is the one and only person who can say what it is that pleases him or her. When it comes to actively taking part in each other's sexual fantasies, here are some other points to consider. Always discuss each of your limits beforehand and make sure that you thoroughly resolve any disagreements or misunderstandings that you have about these limits. Some couples find it quite helpful to develop a code word to indicate that this is enough before proceeding further. Make sure that each of you agrees to stop any time the other person wants to. If you try something you find to be unpleasant, simply choose to try it a different way the next time or agree not to repeat it at all. And never allow yourself to be forced or to force your partner to do anything that may produce guilt or other residual negative feelings in either of you. Each of you needs to allow the other person the right to consent or not to consent at any time. Feel free to use your imagination so that each of you can have the opportunity to introduce new roles. This exploration will make the experience special for both of you. However, be aware, many people find that acting out a fantasy is actually less enjoyable than keeping it at the level of imagination. After all, the most important sex organs in our bodies are our brains, and for many, there's truth to the adage that the greatest aphrodisiac is our own mind. So it's important to recognize how much of a role attitude plays in increasing your passion. By attitude, I mean the acceptance not only of your partner and of your partner's desires, but of yourself and of your own desires as well. And make sure you avoid the unrealistic expectation of demanding that it always be wonderful. The key word here is always. Be aware that some of the attitudes you have about sex could be the result of messages you grew up with, things you're carrying over from another relationship, or fears and myths you just picked up along the way. These may be concepts you've adopted without consciously choosing them or thinking them through. If any of these possibilities ring true, you may want to ask yourself, why am I holding on to them? And once you've asked yourself this question, then give yourself or yourselves the permission to let them go. You owe these myths no loyalty. Take a moment to reflect on the myths you're carrying around with you, or on the attitudes you'd be a lot better off changing or getting rid of, which could be affecting your ability to have the kind of passion in your relationship that would make your life so much more fulfilling. Once you've identified your myths or self-defeating attitudes, then spend a few moments discussing with your partner or reflecting on your own just what it will take to let go and get rid of them once and for all. Incidentally, many couples find that they can be of great support to each other in this regard. Turn off the tape in order to reflect and take note of these myths now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Up to now, our discussion has focused on your choices. If one or both of you has a sexual dysfunction, on the other hand, your choices will be limited. A partner with a sexual dysfunction is unable, as opposed to unwilling, to perform sexually to the desired level. Most people experience occasional sexual dysfunctions that are short-term in nature. An in-depth discussion of the diagnosis and treatment for sexual dysfunction is beyond the scope of this program, but I'll briefly discuss the most common sexual dysfunctions here in order to help you to begin to recognize them. Let me emphasize again that it's common under the most normal of circumstances to experience some of them occasionally. This is important to remember. Consider it a sexual dysfunction only if it continues and becomes typical of your sexual performance. The first one I'll mention is called inhibited sexual desire, or ISD. This is perhaps the most common sexual dysfunction of all. Its main symptom is a marked decrease in sexual desire, and it can affect one or both partners. In addition, your decreased desire could be directed only towards your partner. It could be a decrease of any type of sexual feelings at all, or anything in between. When ISD is experienced only towards your partner, it's usually symptomatic of an issue or a problem that's unresolved within the relationship. However, in the latter case, ISD also can be caused by a combination of psychological factors such as depression or a variety of medical problems. Never confuse inhibited sexual desire with differences in the amounts of sex two partners desire. Instead, it refers to the difference between what was once your normal sexual desire compared with what it is now. Inhibited sexual desire may be a chronic condition or it may be sporadic. At its extreme, it can mean a total loss of sexual desire. The next one is premature ejaculation, and here the man lacks control and ejaculates very quickly, usually in less than 1 to 3 minutes after penetration, or sometimes even before penetration. There are some very specific techniques that can be learned in therapy to improve this condition in a very short period of time. Next is erectile dysfunction or impotence, which generally refers to a man's inability to obtain or maintain an erection for intercourse. A man with primary impotence has never been able to perform sexually. Secondary impotence is the diagnosis if a man was once able to perform sexually but has lost that ability. Generally speaking, a man who is able to successfully masturbate or gets morning erections but is impotent with his partner has a problem which is addressable in psychotherapy. However, the inability to maintain erections even during masturbation may suggest a medical problem. Another male dysfunction is retarded ejaculation. This is generally the diagnosis when a man maintains an erection for an inordinately long period of time during intercourse, but cannot ejaculate when he wants to. Once again, if he can ejaculate during masturbation, this indicates that his condition is probably not caused by medical factors. A common female dysfunction is anorgasmia. This term refers to a condition in which a woman has never been able to achieve orgasm or has achieved it only under certain circumstances, such as when she's masturbating. If she can't have an orgasm with her partner in a way that she finds satisfactory, she may have a degree of this condition. Next is vaginismus, which is the tightening of the vaginal muscle, which prevents penetration during intercourse. This is treated psychologically through behavioral techniques. And the last one I'll mention is called dyspareunia, which is painful intercourse. This one can occur in men or women, but is much more common in women. It can be medically or psychologically induced. Sexual dysfunctions can have many causes. Among them are unresolved relationship issues, especially anger, early sexual conditioning or abuse, negative body images, side effects of certain drugs, the lack of adequate sexual stimulation, or a variety of medical problems. But one very common psychological cause is performance anxiety, which can affect both men and women. Typically, someone who has performance anxiety feels turned off during or just before the sexual act is about to begin. Anxiety is thought to be the underlying feeling. Any of these causes or a combination of them can contribute to a total or partial loss of sexual appetite or to a loss of the ability to perform. Once a sexual dysfunction occurs, it often takes on a life of its own. Increased performance anxiety only increases the fear of another sexual failure. But remember, a great deal is known about all of these dysfunctions. It's a sad thing when a couple tells me that it's taken them years and years to seek information or treatment for a problem that has been bothering one or both of them. Once addressed, these problems may be easily and quickly corrected. I hope you're beginning to get the idea that the degree to which you and your partner wish to experience passion together is something that you can determine and make happen. Here are some specific things that you can do right now in order to turn this important part of your life around very quickly. Listen to them all, and then make a commitment to talk about those which appeal to you. First, I'd like you to make a specific date with each other. Plan a one-hour lovemaking session for some time in the very near future. While planning it, talk about how you can make this very special. This might involve getting flowers or scents, setting up music, or making sure that your children are taken care of. In short, remove all of the possible obstacles and distractions. Now, this lovemaking session can be as special as you want it to be, but the specific assignment here is for each of you to think about how you can make it different and special. Also, there needs to be an agreement that no matter how it turns out, there won't be any negativity dumped on either one of you as long as you both show up at the appointed time, of course. Are you wondering what's so different about this? It may be that you've always taken for granted the time that you put aside for lovemaking, and for some reason resist or have a problem with the idea of planning it. Remember, one of the realities of a long-term relationship is that our daily routine often interferes with the time we put aside for lovemaking. So make this appointment at least a day or two ahead of time, and make it a point to talk about it a few times in a titillating way so that both of you can actually look forward to it, just like you look forward to the times you spent together when you first met or at the beginning of your relationship. Here's a short visualization exercise. Think about that time when you first got together. What attracted you to your partner? What was it that initially turned you on to him or her? What was it that you felt in your body when you were first together and it was clear that there was some mutual attraction? With your eyes closed, think back to that first moment when you felt your attraction towards your partner starting to build. What was going on for you? What do you think was going on for your partner? See if you can relive this within yourself or yourselves if you're together. but first do it individually. Notice the freshness that you may be feeling, or perhaps the sense of well-being. Notice how you felt about yourself, and how this other person stood apart from the others you may have known or dated. Take all the time you need to come up with a real clear image of this first time when those delicious romantic feelings came to you so effortlessly. Turn off the tape and give yourself as much time as you need to fully connect with this image, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. I'd like you now to write down a few key words, key phrases, or key sentences which can help you to recapture this experience whenever you choose to. If you and your partner are doing this together, take some time, in fact, take a long time, to share with each other what your visions were, and just as you may have been able to connect with your own visualizations of the beginning of your relationship, see if you can take in your partner's visualizations as well. This next exercise is an opportunity for the two of you to talk about elements in the relationship which are important to each of you. Again, take all the time you need to share with your partner the things you like and admire the most about him or her. Next, where would you like to see the relationship go from here? Then look at your partner and say, "I really feel close to you when," and complete this sentence with all the things that come to mind. Next, and at your own pace, complete these sentences. What I like best about our relationship is the things I feel most proud of when I'm talking to others about you are. We could be a lot closer if. The things we used to do that I miss the most are a sexual fantasy that I would really like to share with you is something that I would love to do with you sexually that we've never done is something that makes me really feel romantic is and finally, fill in the blanks for anything that I may have missed of a positive nature that you would like to share with your partner. Take the opportunity to do this next. When doing this exercise, I suggest that you start off by setting aside at least 15 minutes a day or more time, but only by mutual agreement. Also, don't attempt to address all of these items at once. Give yourselves the time and opportunity to digest each other's responses. Most importantly, don't allow this exercise to become a source of upset or anger. Remember, its purpose is to help you to become closer and more intimate. The next exercise is one that each of you can do individually at a time when it's convenient. Think about and then write down things that may have come up for you in your own mind while doing the previous exercise, which you may have been too shy to share with your partner. Practically all of us have something that fits into this category. What does this question bring up for you? A memory? A fantasy? A desire? Then for each item that you've identified, ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen if I share this with my partner? Am I really choosing to keep this to myself? Which is, of course, okay, as it's perfectly fine to have parts of yourself that you choose to share with no one else. However, it becomes a problem when you really haven't chosen not to share something, but are simply acting out of your fears or anxieties. So refine your list. What are some things that you would really like to share with your partner that you've held back from saying? Then ask yourself some other questions. What would be necessary for me to take the risk I'd like to take? Is there a part of the secret or some items in this list that I can tell my partner just to test the waters? Is there really a danger? And do the advantages of keeping it to myself outweigh the disadvantages or risks of disclosing it? I highly encourage you to take the risk and be more open. However, if you find that taking it is something you absolutely don't want to do, respect yourself for making that choice and leave the option open for another time. This next exercise should also be done individually. Think about the best sexual experience you ever had in your entire life. If there are several, see if you can narrow it down to just one or two. Or you may choose to do this for all of the ones that you've identified as being the best in your life. Just as you did previously with the experience you relived with your own partner, close your eyes and relive this experience you've identified as the best or one of the best sexual experiences you've ever had, regardless of whom the experience may have been with. Next, I'd like you to fantasize having that level of satisfaction and fulfillment with your present partner. Become aware of what you and your partner can do together that can come as close as possible to that particular scene you've relived. This next exercise should be done with your partner at a time when you can give this all the attention it deserves. The first exercise is called Sensate Focus and was developed by Masters and Johnson years ago to help treat sexual dysfunctions. However, you'll quickly see that this type of exercise can be extremely pleasuring under any circumstances. Set some time aside for each of you to give the other a sensuous massage. Using oil invariably makes massage feel more pleasurable for both the giver and the receiver. Take at least a half hour for each of you to give the other partner a complete massage, except for the breast and genital area. After you've each done this, you may choose to go back to the original giver and receiver. This time, when you're the giver, tease and caress your partner's breasts and genital area until your partner is satisfied and then switch. Some variations of this include you and your partner masturbating in each other's presence, and while doing this, showing each other the specific things that most turn you on and the specific spots that are most stimulating to each of you. Take your partner's hand and guide it to the areas you most want touched. Remember, it's chancy at best and even more likely unrealistic that your partner can truly know things such as the sensitive areas of your body and what makes them feel most satisfied, unless you can fine-tune this by showing your partner. Another key here may be repetition. So getting angry or upset if your partner doesn't get it the first time is self-defeating. Let this be a pleasurable exercise for both of you, and you'll want to repeat it often. This way, you're each taking the responsibility for your own pleasure, as well as being a great source of fulfillment for each other. And remember, show your partner exactly what it is that you want and exactly how to do it. Use your entire body. Your tongue, your hair, your forearms, etc., to instruct your partner so it's understood what turns you on. But at the same time, be sensitive to things that your partner finds distasteful too. Be sensitive about what may be pleasing to you that may make your partner uncomfortable or even be a complete turnoff. Remember, if this gets to be an area of tension or conflict between the two of you, you'll quickly begin to avoid this kind of contact, and the result could be a very unhealthy and unproductive resentment between you. So keep in mind that the purpose of this is pleasure, not control, not contest, not ridicule, and not comparison. In fact, make a pact right up front that you will not push each other in any direction where there's discomfort, but do discuss areas of discomfort so that you both fully understand them. Some other types of contact that you could find extremely sensuous and enjoyable include taking baths or showers together, spending some time kissing and hugging the way you might have done when you were younger or first got together, even at locations where you would be unlikely to find yourself engaging in this kind of activity spontaneously, such as the back of a car in the movies, even on a train or airplane? This can be seductive, fun, and quite enjoyable. And it could even leave you longing for your next sexual encounter, which might be something you haven't felt for a long time. Though sex is an extremely important element of passion, it's certainly not all there is. Passion is the force that made you become a couple in the first place, and it's what makes a love relationship special. Yet it's a rare couple that doesn't feel passion ebbing away at times. Passion can make you want to be with each other. It's a useful motivator to get you to put your energies into your relationship, and your relationship may often require and certainly deserves your best efforts. When sex is going well, it's often taken for granted. But when it isn't working, it can be a very painful factor in your relationship. So what are some of the keys to keeping passion alive? Of course, there are no guarantees, but partners who share the most positive and prolonged passion seem to have some of these things in common. Couples who remember the importance of communication are often the best at keeping sexual passion alive. I recommend that you attend to your sex life whether or not either of you recognizes that a problem exists. Resolve all of your issues that generate anger rather than letting it build up or seethe. Remember, nothing kills positive passion like anger. Anger generated by unresolved issues can zap away your desire for each other. So if this is the case, first, concentrate on taking care of the issues you're angry about. In most cases, this will make a huge difference. You may find two of our other programs helpful, Overcoming Your Anger in the Shortest Possible Period of Time, and How to Develop the Ingredients for Staying Together in Your Marriage or Love Relationship, which teaches communication skills. Next, view each other as lovers both in and out of the bedroom. Then you can enjoy your non-sexual play together as well. This is also an extremely important part of most good relationships. Do you spend time doing some of the things that you enjoyed early in your relationship? You know what you like or like doing together, going out for dinner, giving each other massages, going to movies, plays and concerts, playing Scrabble, taking walks, going horseback riding, sitting by the fire, going to the beach, etc., etc., etc. These are the kind of activities that most frequently get neglected in the whirlwind of life. Don't let that happen. Set some time aside for things you like to do, as well as for things you must do together. Learn to laugh with each other more. Learn more about one another. Share more aspects of yourself with your partner and keep increasing your intimacy level by letting life's events bring you closer together, not farther apart. Be romantic in small ways and on a consistent basis. Don't necessarily wait for holidays or special occasions to show your affection and love toward each other. Act as if your partner were your ideal lover. When you can both do that, then you'll soon become each other's ideal lover. And most importantly, remember it's really much more about attitude than technique. When passion dies, it's rarely one person's fault. But if you see this happening, take responsibility to work together and restore it. And that very process itself may be the thing which brings passion and you back together again in a much, much stronger way. Let me leave you now with an acronym for passion developed by my colleague, partner, and wife, Dr. Arlene Goldman. P stands for play. Think of sex as adult play and remember to play non-sexually as well. A is acceptance of yourself and each other, and this includes your bodies as well as your fantasies. S stands for sensation. Remember to experience sex through all your senses and give yourself the time to feel. The next S in passion stands for seduction. All those things like kissing, giving each other pet names, and talking about sex are part of that seduction. I stands for intuition. As you become closer, you'll become tuned into each other on this level as well. O is for openness, and remember, the more open about your needs and desires you can become, the better chance there is that they'll be fulfilled. And N stands for natural. If you can do all of these other things, having a passionate relationship will naturally follow. I hope you've enjoyed and gotten great benefit from this program, and let me once again remind you to think of it as a source of support that's always there for you to continue to help your relationship grow. And please let us know how you're doing. We're very interested in the impact this program may have had on your relationship and welcome any comments you may have had. If we can be of any assistance to you with respect to resources that can help you further, feel free to call or write us. I'm Dr. Michael Broder, wishing you happiness and fulfillment.